Hi, I'm Becky Sims, and welcome to Behind the Future, the podcast from Aspiration Digital. We're here to unlock digital careers, one conversation at a time. On each episode, I'll be joined by a student co-host. We'll be interviewing amazing people from across the industry to learn about how they got started in their career and what it is that they do. Let's dive in to find out the secrets to their success.
Whoa, Claudia was brilliant, wasn't she?
She really was.
She really knows her stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What was most impactful for you?
I would say that she was saying how like consistency is key to building your own personal image and to like put yourself out there. And there's like a change in CV, like what's it called? Decline.
Yeah.
In CV.
Yeah, the future of the CV could be gone. It might be that actually you just send off your LinkedIn, your TikTok, your Instagram. Mm-hmm. So maybe that prediction might be right. I feel like also in this episode, we got a commitment from you on some posting. So let's see. Let's let our audience in for the episode and let's get them to hold you to account that we've got to get you posting. So, right, we'll let you dive in.
Hi, I'm Claudia and I'm taking you behind the future.
Welcome to another episode of Behind the Future. I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Ashley. Ashley, tell us a bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Ashley. I'm currently an A-level student studying media, economics and business. And I've got an interest in going into marketing in the future.
Amazing. Lovely. Well, I think you're going to enjoy this. And we are joined by Claudia. Claudia, welcome to the show. Tell us a bit about yourself.
So I am currently a strategy director for a personal branding agency. So essentially, we work with CEOs, founders, C-suites, people at kind of like senior leadership levels in corporate teams, essentially to help them build their reputations. And the main way we do that is through kind of like distributing them through social media.
Amazing. Oh, I feel like we're going to have loads of questions to learn more about that.
Are we?
But where's your first question?
So Claudia, how did you stumble upon your current career?
That is a very good question. It was definitely a stumble. So I studied international relations at uni, if we go all the way back. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I was just kind of interested in, I guess, in things that were happening now. So kind of like current affairs, I suppose. And then going through uni, I knew that I wanted to do something maybe a little bit more creative. Didn't really know what that was. I just knew that marketing was kind of like a creative industry. So I thought maybe I'll start there. Went through the years, worked in an agency for a little bit, kind of stumbled across small businesses. But the way that I got into my role now was I started posting on LinkedIn. And then my now boss reached out to me to say, oh, I've seen what you're posting. Really cool. Have you ever thought about like creating content for anyone else? At the time, I had absolutely no idea that was a job, didn't know that was a thing. I just knew that I wanted to do it for myself because it was fun, interesting, something a little bit different. So I started actually as a freelance copywriter, creating LinkedIn content for people. And then it's kind of evolved over the years into kind of personal brand manager. Then it evolved into head of operations. And then about a year ago, I got promoted to strategy director. So yeah, it's been a bit of a convoluted journey, let's say. There's been some ups and downs and done some bizarre things probably over the years. But yeah, that's how I kind of got into where I'm at now.
Amazing. I think there's loads to unpack in there as well. So let's go back to uni. So international relations, tell us about that.
Yeah, so it was a degree that I absolutely loved. Like it was so interesting. I actually did a year of English and philosophy first. I was really into English at school and it was kind of like the only thing that I thought that I would be good at going to uni. I didn't really know actually international relations was really a degree until I got there. And then I did one term and it was quite philosophy heavy. And I was like, oh, this is definitely not what I thought it was going to be. And then I was thinking about changing, didn't know what to. And then the start of my second term of my first year, I just thought, no, I need to mix up, do something different. So I finished out the year and then switched to international relations and it was so much better. It was so much more interesting. I felt like it was much more rooted in things that were happening now rather than kind of like philosophy, which is definitely not things that are happening now.
Yep.
And I just found like the modules and stuff really interesting. The conversations that we would have, I did modules that were like terrorism, gender and violence, like Africa, things like that, like things all around the world. The way that institutions fit together was like really interesting to me. And it's actually funny because for so many years, I didn't think that that was really relevant to what I'm doing. Whereas actually a lot of what I do now is like looking at conversations that are happening in different industries or in different markets around the world and kind of like piece those things together. So it's definitely come like all the way back around to be actually really relevant to my job now, even though at the time I was like, I don't really know where I'm going to go with this.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of people do degrees that then they just don't end up really using. They kind of use more of the skills they've learned as opposed to the actual learnings. But no, that sounds really interesting. How hard was it to change courses? Because I guess that's the fear, isn't it? You're going to go and pick a subject, you're going to study it for 3 or 4 years, and sometimes you do get it wrong. It's not what you enjoy. Was that difficult?
I think it was more the pressure that I was putting on myself to have chosen this thing. And especially when you're in school, there's so much like, I think, pressure to go down a certain path, or you pick your degree based on the career that you want to go into. And that's what I was kind of doing. Like, again, if we're thinking like I wanted to be creative, for me, English was like a bit more of a creative degree. But in terms of changing, it was more the kind of like, oh God, I need to like now recalibrate my life and think about a different career path. Mm. So that's probably the biggest challenge in all, I'd say. But in terms of kind of like the actual process, it was just a few conversations, a few forms to fill out, but wasn't too stressful. So it's definitely, and actually over the years, I've met quite a few people that have started one thing and then shifted into something else. So you kind of know, I think, in your gut when something's not 100% right. So I was like, right, okay, I definitely need to do something about this.
That's good. And it's good that you did, because otherwise you spend the next couple of years just not enjoying what you're doing,
100%.
Probably not putting your all into it, not doing as well as you could because you don't enjoy it. It's life's too short to not be having fun.
Yes, 100%.
100% my beliefs.
How useful do you think uni was to drive you to this career?
Oh, that's a really good question. I kind of think about uni in two ways. I think about the like education formal side of it, and then I guess the like informal side of it as well. And the formal side of it in terms of like my degree and how much use I actually got out of that initially was fairly minimal, probably because I didn't know exactly the career path that I wanted to go down. I think if you know 100% what you want to do and you can get a degree that backs that up, I think it's really, really valuable. But for someone who's maybe a bit uncertain like I was, in terms of like the formal education, for me, it was like a bit of a stopgap in terms of I need a bit of time to figure out what I want my career to look like. I'm going to do a degree that I'm interested in and learn about things that I'm curious about, not necessarily like, right, okay, I'm going to set myself on a career trajectory. So in terms of like the formality of the education side of it, I don't know if it was 100% right for me at that time, but it was really useful in giving me a chance to like pause for a few years, 4 years I ended up doing, which is a good amount of time. And think about what I really wanted to do. And it definitely set me on like a bit of a different path. I actually met someone at uni that I later ended up working for, which is a bit of a different story in itself. But in terms of like, I guess the informal side of it, which is like the people that I met, I had so much fun when I was there, the things that I got to do. For me, it was like a real catalyst for my career because I went into uni a very, very shy person and very awkward. And I think after 3 or 4 years of like kind of being dropped in at the deep end and having to go out and meet people and be in different experiences and scenarios, like for me, that was an absolute game changer for my career and really for my life as well. And also the people that I met there have changed my life in every way, career-wise and also like friendship-wise, network-wise. Like it's such a positive in that aspect because you're just in this like condensed area of people that are like you and have the same goals as you and are interested in the same things as you. And I think it takes a bit of effort to find those people. And in my first 6 months of uni, I was really uncertain because it was such a big change. And I'd gone from this kind of like small town into a massive city. You're on your own. It is really daunting. And I think until you're there, you're like, you don't really realize the impact of it. But yeah, after 4 years, I think in terms of confidence in myself and like ability to kind of like interact with people in a non-awkward way, definitely helped.
Oh dear. No, it's good, isn't it? It just gets you out, doesn't it? And yeah. It forces you, especially when you're living away from home, away from creature comforts, family. You just got to find a way.
100%.
You talked about network there. Mm-hmm. You started building your network at that point. Probably even I found some of the people we've interviewed that actually they're like, oh no, some of my school friends are people I've now done business with, etc. Yeah. But you don't think of it as network at that point, but it is the start of building a network, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And actually last week I had two meetings with people that I went to uni with. Wow. For various different things. And I think you're exactly right. Like at the time, at no point in my uni experience did I think I'm going to go on this night out and I'm going to network with people. But that's exactly what you're doing. And I think the friendships that you form at uni, especially from my experience, like you do so much with people, so close with people, you spend so much time with them. And also the careers that they have gone on to have actually been kind of linked to what I'm doing now. And a lot of my friends do work in marketing and in digital, or they work for smaller companies. So for me, that's really relevant. And it's kind of a weird one because I was thinking, like, what advice would I give in terms of network? And I don't think I would encourage people to network at uni because it feels a bit like alien and it feels a bit contrived. But the advice I would give is like make as many friends as possible in as different fields as possible, because I played a lot of sport at uni and that was my kind of like main thing that I did, that I committed to. And I think on one hand, it was really good because it was people doing all different degrees and going off into different careers. So it was really helpful in that sense. But then on the other side, like I definitely think that I could have explored more things like the media side of uni, whether it was like radio or journalism or writing, which I didn't actually think about because I was just thinking about netball, which was what I was playing at the time. So I think if you've got the opportunity to kind of mix it up a little bit in some way, whether it's like spending time with people in different year groups or studying different subjects, like I think that would be really beneficial, like if you're thinking about network longer term.
Yeah. Yeah. And even realizing that confidence to go and chat to someone in a bar is just the same as when actually you're out in the world of work and you turn up to a networking event and you don't know anyone and you're like, oh, how do I go and start a conversation? It's like, well, hold on, I used to do it in a bar, so I can do it anywhere. Because it is awkward, isn't it?
It is awkward, yeah.
Even if you're not an awkward person, it's awkward. You're like, oh, how do I start a conversation? Yeah. Where do I go from? But yeah, okay, exciting. What about, you said you started in an agency. Mm-hmm. Did you know what an agency was? Like, how did that come about? Because I think a lot of people don't know it. Like, I know when I first interviewed for an agency, I was like, I have no idea what this is, but I'll wing it.
Yeah, I had absolutely no idea what an agency was when I was 22, finishing uni. So weirdly, actually, again, this is how uni connections have kind of helped in all of my roles, actually. So again, I finished uni, didn't know what I wanted to do. Was looking just for like something as a bit of a stopgap, like an internship, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it was. I kind of would have done anything at that point. And one of my friend's cousins or something worked at an agency and she was like, oh, we need someone to answer a hotline for 4 weeks. In an agency, you'll sit in the office every day. This was pre-COVID, so everyone was in the office every day. We need someone to answer a hotline and then just be on the phone, but you'll be around everyone in the office. So I was like, perfect, that gets me in the door. And I think throughout my career, there's always been a running theme of like, whatever it is that gets me through the door, I'll do it initially. I'll build the relationships, I'll show that I can do it, and then hopefully we'll kind of go from there. So I was like, I'll answer the phone, it's fine. Anyway, I sat at the desk for 4 weeks. The phone did not ring one time. Didn't ring once.
What was it meant to be a hotline?
It was like an ad that they had done. So it was Budweiser, the client that I was working on. So it was like an ad that they'd done on a packet and it was for people to ring up and get free something or other.
Wow.
Okay. So no one rang. But the benefit of that was that I was kind of like sat at my desk, twiddling my thumbs, asking loads of questions about how does this work? How does this work? And I was in like an account exec kind of position that I was learning from. So essentially I was just getting trained as an account executive without actually being one. And then at the end of the 4 weeks, I got on so well with the team and had tried really hard to be like, right, okay, I'm going to cling on to this for dear life. So they offered me a role at the end of it. And that's how I kind of got my foot in the door initially and then clawed my way in. But again, I think that was really valuable because I was like, I know that I can do it. I know that I can be good and prove myself when I'm there. I just need a way to get in the door. And I think, again, in terms of like career, especially as a first job, so many people think that it has to be like the dream job. Answering the phone on a hotline was not my dream job, but I just needed something to show that I could do a good job later down the line.
Well, and also it sounds like what you demonstrated while you were there was curiosity. And there's nothing business people like more than someone that's curious, that wants to learn, wants to understand. And I think that probably would have made you stand out. You weren't like, oh, I'll just sit and play on my phone while the phone's not ringing.
Yeah.
I'll be curious and get involved.
Yeah, I also had absolutely no idea what was going on, so I needed to ask some questions.
What are we all doing here? Yeah. Why is this phone not ringing as well? Yeah, that must have been. And so was there a bit of a bad feeling about the phone not ringing? Was that a failed campaign or was it just...
I can't remember. I don't think so. I think it was just one of those things that was like a bit of a, we'll try it, we'll see what happens.
And I guess being Budweiser, if it had started ringing, it could have rung a lot because a huge audience.
Maybe, I don't know if it was a wrong number maybe, but it definitely didn't.
Well, at least there wasn't a bad feeling in the office about it. So
no, not at all.
What skills would you think is key to your line of work?
So a few things I think are definitely important in what I do now. A key one I'd say is like being able to understand the context of someone's conversation. So again, a lot of what we do is kind of like looking at CEOs and founders, understanding exactly the opportunities that they need to drive for their business. So whether that's they're looking to get more clients and they need to build a client pipeline, whether that's they're looking to raise investment and they need to get like attention and eyeballs on their company, whether it's just that they need to share their brand messages in a bit of a different way. So we don't work with the brand, we just work with the person. So I think a really, really key one is being able to speak to anyone kind of on a level. And if we go back to what I was saying before about confidence, like that definitely was not me a few years ago. And I think I've definitely gone on an evolution of constantly putting myself outside of my comfort zone because I know how important that skill is across so many different roles, not just that one. And I was like, I'm not going to let that be the thing that holds me back because it's definitely something that I can change for one. And also I know how important it is to so many things. So I think being able to like go into a conversation with anyone, whether it's a CEO or founder or an exec in a team, and just be able to kind of like chat it out is really important. And the only way to do that is to put yourself into sometimes uncomfortable scenarios. I think another one is being able to take something that's kind of like a bigger picture thinking and condense it into an idea that's easily digestible. And again, that's like, I think people always term it as a kind of like a soft skill. Like you can't put a yes or no, right or wrong on something like that. But in terms of like strategy, I guess, which is my main job, it's definitely something that I've tried to get better at over the years. And it's actually a really hard skill, I think, to take something that is like really complex and nuanced and distill it into something that is really straightforward. And I think especially in the world of social media, I'm always really conscious of not turning it into something that's just a clickbait title. And I think that where we operate for the people that we work with is very much focused around their positioning. So what they want people to know about them. And I think that it would be really easy for me to fall into the clickbait trap of, okay, I know that this many people are going to read this in this way. And it just gets their attention instantly. But for me, as someone whose job it is to protect their reputation, I'm also thinking, right, okay, how do we want people to see them at a bigger scale? Do we just want them to see them as someone who generates clickbait titles? Or do we want people to see them as someone who is really considered and thought-provoking? So I think those are probably the key ones at the moment, is like relationship building, conversation, likability, I think, is a really important one. And then also taking complex, nuanced situations and distilling them into something that's understandable, digestible, and more straightforward, I think.
Love that. And talking about confidence, when did you realize you had to put yourself out there? Like, was there a click moment where you were like, I need to put myself in more of these situations and I need to force this because this is going to help me? Or do you think it was just a natural evolution?
I think it was a bit of both. I think when I very first started working, like when I had that job to answer the phone, my biggest fear was answering a phone in a busy office. And I was like, if this phone rings, I'm going to have to sit here and I'm going to have to answer it in front of all these people. So I was kind of thrown in at the deep end in that sense. But I think it was being in an office initially and like interacting with so many people on a day-to-day. And I was watching people and I was like, it's so easy for you. Like, how do you do that and just walk into a room and command attention or lead a meeting or have a conversation with someone? And it's just like kind of, yeah, like almost not intentional, just kind of like happens. And I was thinking, if I want to get to where those people are, I'm going to have to get good at that skill. So it was a little bit of kind of putting myself in at the deep end in some elements, but also when you're around people that are doing all the time, you kind of become accustomed to it. So yeah, probably a bit of both. And I'd say definitely more so when I started working, whereas at uni, it's a bit easier to stay in your kind of little bubble of people that you know and places that you go to. Whereas when you start working, it's definitely not that. And you have the responsibility also of, you've got a job to do, you have to do it well, you're getting paid for it. So I think, yeah, it was a bit of a natural evolution in terms of being in the working world. And also understanding that if I wanted to progress quickly, I had to get good at this thing that everyone else was really good at.
And what do you think the difference would have been? Because I suppose a lot of young people at the moment, if they start a job, they might start a remote job. So they might not have that horrendous moment of, got to answer the phone in the office or getting to see those people around
jealous.
Them. Yeah, but do you think it would have stunted your growth not getting to experience that? Would it have made it a slower uphill road to be able to go on that development because you wouldn't have necessarily seen it? I don't know.
Again, I'm kind of in two minds about the being in an office environment versus not, because if I think about when I first started, it was really instrumental to my development to hear the conversations that other people were having and like pick up bits and how they came to an idea. Or even if they were discussing something over the desk, I was like, oh, I can chip into that. And suddenly you're on their radar of like being the person that has ideas, etc. So I think in that sense, and also building relationships, it was really, really valuable. And I still know some of the people that I worked in that agency with 8 years ago today. And we wouldn't definitely be as close if it had just been remote. But I think I look at the business that I'm in now, and we're not a fully remote business, we're a hybrid business, but the way that we communicate is so much in WhatsApp and Teams and whatever it is, messaging wise. And I think we're really, really good at communicating quickly and having like discussions about ideas in a message format. And I think it's possible to do as long as everyone is really open about their communication and everyone is really intentional about knowing that we need to include people in these conversations, which I think we're constantly thinking about, and we're proactive in that sense. So I think it's, if you're going to be a remote business, you have to know that people might be missing out in conversations and try and include them where you can, or bring them into discussions over message that they don't necessarily need to input into, but they need to see the exchange happen and they need to see like how you get to that end result. Yeah. Whether it's in an actual physical conversation or not. I think the limiting factor of it is when you get on a Zoom call or a virtual call or whatever it is, you're there, you have the conversation about the thing and then it ends. Whereas I think the benefit you have of being in an office with people in terms of relationship building is you're there, you have the conversation, then you have the after conversation, then you have the catch up about the weekend, then you have the other thing. And yeah. I think in terms of longevity of relationships and like, I don't know, density of relationships, like that is so important long term. Because again, if you're thinking about like how you build your network, those kind of like short interim relationships aren't as impactful later down the line as the ones where, oh, remember we had that funny conversation about this thing that happened. Or I don't know, it just feels like you can build a much deeper connection with someone when you spend a considerable amount of time with them in person. It's not to say you can't build really good relationships with people virtually, but for me, it's just not quite the same.
There is something different, yeah. Isn't there? And also, like, actually, that debrief part of things, I'm the one that sits on the Zoom call when everyone else, I'm like, no, stay, yeah. Wait for the client to go, stay, I want the debrief. Because we need the debrief, partly to have the chit-chat, but also, like, I'll join early to have some of the chit-chat as well. Mm-hmm. But it is that moment to go, what did you think about that? And to have that conversation and just make sure, so you're clear what you're doing next, I know what I'm doing next, we know what's happening. Whereas if you all just disappear off, it's then like, is everyone aligned? Well, we don't know. Yeah. So yeah, still trying to mimic some of that online is really helpful. Your job title includes a word that a lot of people struggle with defining: strategy.
You're going to ask me this.
Oh, well, hopefully you've practiced what you would say strategy is, because you could ask this question to 100 different people and I think you get 100 different answers. So I don't think there's a right or wrong. Well, yeah. Unless you said it's pink elephants, that would be wrong.
Maybe wrong.
So let's not go with that one. But yeah, what would you say strategy is? What does it mean to you?
I think strategy is different in every business, for one, so I understand why it's always a different answer. But I think strategy in terms of personal branding in particular is like looking at the macro things. So you look at the really, really big things that are going to impact someone's business. Like I was saying before, like whether it's they're raising investment, whether it's they're trying to build a community around something, what is it actually that business needs to achieve in terms of its goals? So you take the bigger picture and then you distill it into kind of like day-to-day actions and targets. And I think it's just really like planning. Yeah. And I think that people use like big confusing words to explain what it is. Like it's understanding one thing and translating that into something that is actionable in its really simplest form. And I think it is a really hard question to answer because so many people have different ones. But I think, yeah, for me, it's just like taking bigger picture thinking and distilling it into something that can actually be executed on a day-to-day. And I think we're very good as a company at keeping that really, really precise. And any strategy thinking that we deliver, we try and do it in 6 pages or less because it's so easy to almost like over-process something. And we've got this idea that links to this idea in this way. And this is all the thinking behind this thing. And this is why we got to this answer. And I think it's really confusing. And fundamentally, I see my job as making confusing things less confusing and really easily actionable for the team that need to do it on a day-to-day, but also the clients that need to understand it, that aren't spending as much time thinking about this as we definitely are.
Yeah, I love that. I think you defined that perfectly.
Thank you.
Nailed it. You can keep your job title.
Are Duolingo, Nike and McDonald's some of your favorite brands? For all the latest marketing and brand news, follow The Drum Mag on Instagram.
How do you use social media to like envision that role?
Great question as well. So social media is, I guess, like works two ways for me. So I think about social media in terms of the clients we work for constantly. That is quite literally my job. And then also I think about social media in terms of how it can also help me in my career. So in terms of my own career, if we start there, I'm constantly thinking about how I show clients I'm going to be really good at my job, basically. And I kind of use it as a tool to think about how I can go into any meeting with any client or any new business meeting or any meeting really, and how do I give them a good impression of me before I go into that conversation, because then that whole conversation that happens after hopefully is a little bit easier. We have something to discuss. They already think that I might be somewhat good at my job. So it's just kind of like creating like a closer environment, let's say, for us to have a conversation that's a bit more walls down. Like we have to have really close relationships with the people that we work with. So I think it really helps for also them to have kind of like an understanding of my thinking and who I am before I go into that conversation as one thing. And then I guess the other side of it, how I use it for my own role, is thinking about the network that I can build, but then also kind of like build on at the same time. So all the people that I know right now that follow me on LinkedIn, and I'm constantly thinking about how I speak to those people and how I help them get to know me a bit better. But then also, how do I reach new people and build my network in that way? Because again, if we're thinking about like future-proofing your career, if I walk into a networking event and there's 100 people at that networking event and the chances are I get to speak to 10 of them and then 2 of them actually follow up, that's pretty small odds. Whereas if I'm thinking about posting on social media and I reach 100,000 people maybe, and then, I don't know, 1,000 of those people are connected with me and then 50 of those people follow up, then for me, it's like a concerted energy and effort in a specific place that could reach potentially more people, whereas a networking event is probably more time, energy, and effort to potentially reach less people. So if I'm thinking about where I can spend my time really efficiently and really effectively, like, it makes sense for me to spend it on social media, possibly sometimes more than networking events, although I still think they're valuable in a bit of a different way.
And you pair the two together, I guess, because when you go to a networking event, then being able to connect with people and get as many of those people to follow up with you on social media, you've then got that opportunity to just keep showing up for them.
100%.
And make sure that you stay in their mind when they're thinking about anything to do with social and your expertise.
Yeah, exactly. And I think for me, like, I use social as a way to kind of keep connecting the dots in between meetings, I guess. So if I'm not seeing... I can't see everyone all the time. I can't go into every single networking event, but I still want people to think that I'm building a relationship with them. And if they're constantly seeing me in their feed or talking about something that they're interested in, or, I don't know, jumping in a conversation that they were having last week, it just makes them think that I'm kind of tapped into the same world that they're tapped into. So the next time that we do meet, you've got like a bit of a jumping off point to go into a conversation. And it's just about familiarity and memorability for me. And I think the easiest way to do that, especially if you're thinking about trying to build your career a bit more at scale, is through constantly posting on some social platform.
And how do you get out of your own way? Because I guess the worst thing with social media is the fear of the numbers, isn't
yes.
it? It's the, oh, what are people going to think if I post this? How many people are going to like it? How many people are going to comment on it? What if someone says the wrong things, like says I've said the wrong thing? Like, how do you get out of your own way and make that space
That's
safe?
A good question. I would ask you, actually, what do you think is the biggest barrier for you posting on social media at the moment?
I would just say just like what people think of you, like
in
the
what
comments
sense?
Like, as in, like, you don't want to present a bad image for yourself, you want to like portray like a good image of
yeah.
yourself, and I feel like that just, I don't know,
yeah,
like that's a barrier,
makes you feel
say.
A bit
yeah.
icky. Yeah. And I think you're so right. I think it's something that so many people feel all the time, but I think the hardest bit for me is like the first 5 times you do it, because you're having those thoughts of like, is anyone going to care? What's anyone going to say? No one's going to like it. If you post 5 posts and no one likes it, you're kind of done with it and you just think, well, here now, I'll just carry on. And I think every single person that I've worked with, whether it's CEO, founder, leader of team that has 150 to 1,000 people in it, all of those people without exception at some point or another have said, is anyone going to care what I say? So it's a universal issue, for one. And I think there is no good advice other than you just have to stick with it. And if anyone tells you different, like, I'll take them on. But it is just a case of, it's just a case of like click and repeat. Like, you just have to get into the rhythm of it. And the way that I kind of frame it in my head, especially on social, is if you just see it as an experiment, like, just see it, I'm just going to post for a week as an experiment, rather than like, oh my God, I need to paint this perfect picture of myself so my future employers are going to see it, my friends are going to see it. If you just like 7 days, set yourself a target of, for 1 week, I'm going to experiment with this thing. I'm just going to experiment with posting on TikTok every single day, see what people think, see what the comments are. And if at the end of the experiment, you don't want to do another experiment, that's fine. You tried. You had your little test that you were going to do, it didn't work out, or it did work out, which I think will probably happen, or you enjoyed it, or you get something out of it that you weren't expecting. And I think if you frame it in that way of like, oh, I'm just going to try things, it really just takes the pressure off yourself. And it just gives you a bit more freedom and creativity to be like, oh, well, it's not for real in a sense.
Yeah.
It's just like kind of experimentation.
Love that. And do you think, because I know we've had people on before that talk more about looking at brand social media and they're looking at every number, etc. Should you be looking at your own numbers on your own posts too, as part of that experimentation, I guess, to see what works, what doesn't work, and how granular should you be with that?
Yeah, I think, again, so what I was saying before about positioning, so I'm always thinking about like, what are other people going to think about this? How does this like encourage people to see someone in a certain way, etc.? And for me, that's what I would always think about. And the numbers are important to a degree, but But I think the second that you start to get super bogged down in those, like you're fighting a bit of a losing battle, because if that's the thing that's stopping you from showing up every day because people aren't engaging in it, you just need to drop that as a metric that you track. And I'd be thinking way more about like, how do I create this into something that I really enjoy and have fun with? And again, it's like that experimentation thing, like, oh, I'm going to try this thing out, see if that works. And for me, the whole process of social media and kind of like getting into a rhythm with it is that you have to make it fun for yourself. And yeah. Even the clients that we work with, like, we have to make it enjoyable for them, and they have to really care about what they're saying, and they have to be invested in it. Because the double win you have when that happens is if the numbers don't do well, but it's something that I posted that I really, really care about, I don't care if it gets 2 likes or 2,000, because it's something that I was really invested in saying and I really wanted to share. And I think that's what I would always be thinking about. And I think until you've got maybe 10,000 followers, I wouldn't get too bogged down in the numbers of it. I think, again, it's interesting to see of like, oh, okay, well, this post spiked saves, or this post spiked comments, but I wouldn't get too bogged down in it. It got 2 likes, it got 10,000 likes. Like, it doesn't really matter. If it's something that you really, really care about saying, or you're really interested in or curious about, put it out there.
Mm. What if someone's sitting there listening thinking, I have nothing to say? Where do they start?
You do. I think that's a really good question. And mm-hmm. I think the thing that I would say to anyone is like, why do you want to do it in the first place? If you're thinking about how it can boost your career, or you can meet different people, think about the type of person that you would want to meet, think about what they do, and then how do you create content that they could engage with or that they're interested in? And even you can create like mini profiles of the people that you're trying to interact with. Like, you can use ChatGPT for it. I'm trying to speak to people that work at these type of businesses. What are they interested in? What are the news articles that they're reading? What are the newsletters they subscribe to? And start listening to the things that they're interested in. And start, this sounds like a really basic piece of advice, but whenever I post something or see something that I'm really interested in, I ask myself the question, like, what do I really think about this? Like, not what is everyone saying to me, like, what I should think. What do I think about this? Like, is it something that I agree with or disagree with? Is it something that I would share or not share? Like, is this specific bit something that I want to find a bit more out about? And I think that to post interesting things, you have to be interested in things. Mm. And I think that's the easiest place to start for me is going on a bit of a deep dive into something that you might be interested in. And it's really hard to stare at a blank screen or a blank page and think, what am I going to say? Whereas if you have all these kind of like thoughts flying around, and I always have a constant stream of things in my notes app of, oh, this was interesting, or research this thing, or watch this YouTube video. So when I come to sit down to think, what am I going to create content about? It's never blank page. Mm. It's always little bits of ideas that I could research a bit more or ask some people questions about. And I think that's another great thing about social, especially when you start to build up a bit of an audience, is that you have this bank of people that you can ask questions to. And mm-hmm. I think people are really afraid of looking like they don't know everything. No one knows everything. So I think if you use social as a tool to find out, I think that's where it becomes really valuable.
Yeah. And I think the more you start doing it, the more it sparks creativity. Because you're like, oh, I've now got this to talk about. So actually, the fact that, Ashley, you're thinking about getting into marketing, mm-hmm. our sponsors, The Drum, have got so much content on all the latest adverts and everything. They're constantly posting on social. You could start saying, do you know what? Twice a week, I'm going to pick an advert that's come out and I'm going to post what I like about it or what I don't like about it and what resonates if it's targeted at my audience, what I think was good, or if I think it's for a different audience, what I think might be good for them. Then you're starting to build up this amazing place that people can come back to when you're looking for jobs to go, oh, Ashley's got an opinion on this and she's on the money with some of it and I'd like to talk to her about it. Like, that would be a great place
to start.
Yeah,
that is a really good idea.
Great advice.
Does that feel like something you could start doing? Should we get some accountability here?
Yeah.
I want to see that. Like, where's
I'm ready
best
for it.
Yeah, where's best to start posting? So someone like Ashley that wants to get into the industry, is it LinkedIn for that? Is it on TikTok? Where should someone be posting?
Again, I think it kind of like, it depends what you're thinking about posting. I think a skill that is really, really valuable to get good at is speaking on camera. So I think anything that encourages you to practice that, again, experiment with that, is really, really valuable. that can probably happen on any platform now, but I'd say in terms of accountability and having to stick to it, maybe TikTok or Instagram would be really helpful. But I think in terms of like condensed audience of where kind of decision makers and people that are going to be hiring for jobs are, I think LinkedIn is a really, really valuable platform. But I also think it can be the most daunting because you know those people are on that platform and you know they could be looking at what you're saying. So again, I think it, for me, it's start where you feel most comfortable. If that's TikTok and you know how to use the app, you know how to use all the features, you know how to edit a video and you feel comfortable there because you spend a lot of time there, start doing it on that. And then the second that you feel like you want to explore a bit more into other things or you feel a bit more confident creating content, then I'd start thinking about, okay, where do I go from here? LinkedIn is a really, really valuable place. And I think, again, it's just you're tapping into people in a slightly different mindset. I don't necessarily agree with the fact that like you need to use certain platforms for certain things because I think the same person that's scrolling on TikTok is the same person that's scrolling on LinkedIn. But I do think that especially for like job hunting and thinking about like future employment, people are in a bit more of a mindset of like, ah, that person's really interesting. Could I hire them? Mm-hmm. Whereas I don't know if that happens to the same degree on TikTok and Instagram.
Yeah. And it depends what the job is. I suppose if a company was looking for someone to manage their TikTok, they're probably going to look at TikTok to see who can create great TikToks. And that's what they would want to see. So if you really wanted to lean into that, then TikTok would kind of make sense. But yeah, I think it's finding, as you say, where you're comfortable. You said about getting comfortable on camera. How do you do that?
You sit in front of a camera and you speak at it for a really long time. Yeah. It's honestly so hard. And I think we've worked with people, again, like founders of businesses with thousands of people, and you put a camera in front of them and they turn into a different person.
Yeah, they suddenly can't talk.
Yeah, it's such a skill because you know that what you're saying is not only going to the room full of people that you're in, but is going to an infinite amount of people everywhere. And I think that thought in your head like can absolutely send people up the walls. But I think that, again, might not be good advice, but the only way to do it is to sit with a camera in front of you and talk at it. And I think that is a skill that the younger generations have in masses already. And I actually think, if anything, that puts you leaps and bounds ahead of people further in their careers that maybe haven't got that skill mastered. So if there's one thing that I would encourage people to like, not even get good at because you're already good at it, but to do consistently and to post and share, it's video content.
And get comfortable to listening to your own voice as well.
Oh, God, it's awful. I don't know if you ever get there.
We all find difficult, isn't it?
Yeah. The thing that I would say actually is like twofold, like recording it and posting it is one thing, but then listening back to it and kind of like breaking it down and thinking, ah, okay, I could have done this bit a bit better. Because what tends to happen is when people share content or stories or whatever it is, they tend to talk about the same things. So you have this kind of like bank of 10 things or bank of 10 ideas, let's say, that you're thinking about sharing. How do you like intentionally try and make those things better? Because you could just go, let's say you're doing podcasts, you could go on one podcast, tell the story, come off, go on another podcast, tell the story, come off. You've done that 10 times, but you've actually not improved upon the thing that you're doing. Mm. So to sit and watch it back and dissect it a bit and think, being really, being intentional about the way that you're practicing and like thinking like, okay, I told this story, but I'll kind of want to include this point in it, or I have this idea, but this is how I think I make it better. And like being really intentional again about how you like show up, I think is really valuable long term, because it forces you to constantly be thinking about how you improve what you're saying. And again, if we go back to one of the most valuable skills, it's like that communication of your ideas and taking bigger picture ideas and distilling them into something that's really concise. It's just such a valuable skill. And I think that comes from doing video content and reflecting on it.
And it is hard. So when I first started recording videos, I couldn't listen to myself. I would give it to Paul. But you have to, don't you? But I would give it to Paul, my business partner and husband, and I'd be like I'm going to go out of the room. Can you just listen to it and just make sure I don't sound stupid? And if it's okay, we'll post it.
Yeah.
And literally that went on for years. I couldn't listen. I'd be like, no. Whereas now
I can. It's cringy and it's painful.
Yeah. But you just have to go through the motions and you push through it and eventually it becomes more comfortable. Yeah. But actually, I suppose your generation, where you have been used to using videos so much more, does it feel as awkward, or are we actually making more of something than for you it's not?
I don't think it does, because personally, I've always loved being on camera. Like, I used to film YouTube videos, filming tour reviews and stuff like that. So I feel like I'm quite comfortable being in like front of cameras.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, I feel like it's really useful.
What did you film your YouTube videos about?
I just like did toy reviews, and I would like film tutorials on how to make like different stuff because I'm quite creative. Mm-hmm. So I'd be like, oh, how to make slime and all those stuff. So yeah.
Love that.
Love that, because yeah. We just didn't have that when we were younger, did we?
I absolutely did not do that. I'm
putting us into the same bucket, and you're definitely younger than I am. But yeah, we definitely didn't have that ability to just get on camera and film stuff. That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's
I love really it. Cool.
Just a quick note from me. We'd love you to hit the subscribe button. This helps us more than you might realise when it comes to growing this podcast, ensuring we can bring you the best guests possible. Thank you. Back to the episode.
I think the thing that is a bit more difficult sometimes is like, how do you transition something like that to drive opportunities in terms of work? So I think about like how you can create content that is going to attract potential employers, if that's your end goal, or if the end goal is to create content that's creative and fun or experiment with things. Like, there's two different camps, I guess. Like, one is like you become a creator, and the other one is like you become a creator for your career. And I think that it depends what you want the outcome to be from the content you're creating. But if you're looking to like drive career opportunities or potential job offers or things like that, I think about like who do you need your audience to be? You need it to be decision makers or like people that are going to hire for the roles that you want. So I'd think about how you get those people's eyes on your content. And it kind of goes back to what we were saying before, like, what is relevant for them? Like, what are their experiences? What are they looking for? And then you just literally kind of work back from that. And then you should end up with like a series of content that is speaking indirectly to that person whilst it being very directly intentional.
It's interesting because actually, I reckon if you were in an interview setting now, I very much doubt you'd ever go back to, oh, when I was a kid, I was making YouTube videos about creating toys. But actually, in an interview, that would be gold dust for me to hear as hiring a young person.
Same.
Because I'd be like, this was built into you. This is part of who you are. This isn't something you're going to force to do because this is the job. And actually, I always find it really interesting when we interview young people that are just straight out of school. They kind of go, oh, I haven't got many examples because, yeah, I haven't had a job. We've had a life, like you've been doing, and a lot of the skills that you need at work are skills that you have in your real life. So it's really interesting to see how you can start to bring those stories out and make them really relevant, because actually filming videos for YouTube about toys when you were younger is absolutely like such
a foundational
thing that most young people won't do. They wouldn't be doing it. They wouldn't choose to do it. They wouldn't put themselves out there. So, oh, there you go. Interview tip for you.
But I think as well, like, it's interesting to see the kind of gap between we're creating content with people that are quite senior, so typically between their 30s and 50s, let's say. Their video skills are significantly not as good, let's say, as someone who's 16, 17.
Yeah.
So I think the advantage that you have on these people is significant right now, because there's been such a considerable amount of time where they've not been practicing the skill that you've been doing for like 5-10 years, maybe, in some people's cases. It's like you've grown up with doing this constantly. So you're better than these people that are much further into their careers. And that's such a huge opportunity in my mind, because if you think about where like all businesses are going, they're heading in the direction of like content is the thing that they all need. And this category of younger generation is much better at creating content, generalizing, than this category. So I think that I'd be thinking about, okay, how do I future-proof my career a little bit? I know that this is the thing that so many businesses are going to need. I'm better at it than a significant portion of society right now. How do I kind of dip my toe into learning more about this or building a career around something that I know so many businesses want and that I am better at than most people? So it's just thinking like long-term career-wise, like how do I future-proof myself a little bit? And I think that's what I've always tried to do with my own career, is think about like what's the next thing, like what's the skill that I need to build. And I had a really interesting conversation with someone that I met last week, and we were at an event she invited me to. We'd never met before. And she was telling me about how she was thinking about her career in terms of building blocks. And I was like, that's so interesting, but it's so rare that you meet someone like that. And she was saying that she got a job in finance because she knew she wanted to understand that side of things. And then she got a job in something else and in marketing because she wanted to understand that side of things and something else. And it was like how she was piecing all these things together to eventually want to start her own business. And I was like, for me, that's the perfect way to look at your career, because if I think back to university and how many people bet their like lives on getting that very first dream job. But for me, I've always tried to think of it as like, I want to kind of constantly be learning and evolving. And if I learned something in my first, the thing that I learned in my first job was that I do not want to work in a marketing agency. But that was really, really valuable for me because it shaped the rest of my career. And I worked in an agency of like 70 to 80 people. And I was frustrated with the way that it was kind of like, this is how it's done. So it's either this way or the highway. And I was like, oh, I've got these ideas and things that I want to do. So I learned very quickly that I needed to work in a small business where things happened really fast and that I could say, I've got this idea, I want to try it. And someone goes, yep. And then the next thing I did was work for a business of 5 people. And the next thing I did was work for a business of 2 people. And now I work in a business of 6 people. So actually that thing that I did the very start of my career that at the time was, oh my God, I don't have a job. What am I going to do? I don't know what to do with the rest of my life. Was actually probably one of the single biggest like deciding factors in what I've gone on to do and everything else. So even if something doesn't work out, it's actually still really valuable information to carry with you into your next job.
Yeah. And being reflective on that, to think about it, not just being, oh, I hate this, move on to the next thing. It's like, what did I not like about it? And what can I learn from that? I really like that. Oh, such an interesting conversation. It feels like your job's quite unique. Is it quite unique? Are there many businesses doing the personal brand side of things, or do you think it's a growing area?
I think it's a growing area massively. And I think that for me, there's like a bit of an evolution happening in content where it's been so focused on brand accounts. And I don't think that that's invaluable, but I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a shift, because brand accounts, maybe one or two of them are starting to have a person or a personality behind them. But I think now people are starting to want to hear from the faces behind the brand, whether that's like influencers that are kind of like attached to the brand and they're evolving into like longer term partnerships rather than one-off posts. But I think the other major thing that's happening is that people want to hear from employees that are part of the business, because they've gone through like this very rigorous process to be hired by a business. And I think that they're the people that kind of embody the values of the business. They're the people that are kind of like deep in the product research and they understand the culture of the business. And they're also people just like us that have applied for a job or in a situation that maybe we see ourselves in, and they're kind of just like on the other side a bit. And I think it's creating this kind of like glass box scenario where everyone can see inside, but you get loads of different perspectives. And I think that's really interesting, is that you could have, let's say you have a brand account that talks about the brand in one way, and then you have the founder of that. So this person's got an account, he or she's got an account. And then you hear their side of the story of how they started the business. They're not selling the products, they're just telling you the story. And then you have 3 different employees, all in different roles, marketing, finance, and something else. And they're all telling their different versions of the story. So the picture that you get of this business that used to just be from one brand account that had no faces attached to it is evolving to suddenly be able to, oh, I see this person going into the office, or I see this person working from home, and oh, I see them engaging with the product this way, or oh, I hear about this cool marketing campaign that they did, but not from seeing the campaign, but from hearing about how this person came up with the idea. And for me, it's just, you're creating more touch points of trust. Whereas you used to just have this one brand account that did that, you now have way more people that create what I think is a closer relationship, because it's person to person as opposed to like brand to person.
Mm. The single biggest thing that I see companies pushing back on for that is, oh, I can't have my employees start to build too much of a personal brand, because what if they leave?
Mm.
What's your answer to that?
They're all going to leave at some point. Of course they are. I understand it as like being wary, but I think the risk is when it's 1 or 2 people. Yeah. So you have faces of the business. If they leave, I can imagine it's quite dramatic, because that whole brand is based around this one person and then it's gone. I think the way to kind of de-risk that is to have multiple employees constantly trying to like build the reputation of the brand and themselves at the same time. It's really frustrating that so many brands think like that because they're like limiting themselves in terms of opportunity. But the thing that I'd be thinking as well for like younger generations is like, I don't think that's going to be a maybe in about 10 years time. I don't think it's going to be a case of, oh, well, you know, not everyone needs to build their brand or not everyone needs to be posting on social or creating a personal brand. In my head, everyone is going to be doing that. And if you don't have an audience of at least some people that are interested and engaged with what you're saying, like especially in marketing and in digital, like you'll just be left behind because it's such an important way to communicate ideas. And again, it goes back to like all those skills that we've spoke about are now culminating in people having their own audiences that they can bring with them along their career. And I think for me, it's like such a cool idea that you can like follow someone's career and they work in this job at this role and they're really invested in this thing. And then they leave, but you're kind of following their journey. And I think that it's a really silly thing for me to think that what if they're going to leave and they take everyone with them, or they might leave in like 2 years, 5 years, 10 years anyway. So you might as well like leverage the opportunity that you have with that person now, as opposed to limit them and then they leave because they didn't get the chance to. Like, it's just illogical thinking.
Well, and you've limited those 2 years where you could have been getting all that opportunity.
Exactly. And I think it says a lot more about the employer than anything else, because it's like, well, you're not going to give this person an opportunity to do something that could potentially slash definitely will positively impact their career because you're scared of what the impact might be on you, as opposed to thinking, how do I help this person get to the like the reach their absolute potential? So flawed.
Yeah, I agree. I'm so with you. Do you think there'll come a point where we lose the CV and actually when you apply for a job, it'll be check out what I've been doing on this social channel. That's who I am.
Yeah, 100%. I think it could be the case, slash I think it is the case in some places already, where you just send people a link to your TikTok, LinkedIn, Instagram profile. You don't have a CV, because if anyone went through my LinkedIn profile now, I don't think you'd need to look at my CV because you see the things that I'm interested in and I'm talking about all the time. I share the things that I'm up to like in my personal life as well as work. And I think that you can build a very, very clear picture of me from just scrolling through one feed, because I've been really intentional about the way that I curate it. And I'm conscious of who could be looking at it. And I think that I would actually much rather someone see that. I've actually not got a CV and I haven't had one for about 10 years. So that doesn't help either. But yeah, definitely. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to see more people applying for jobs with videos.
Yeah. I think it's a really cool way just to, because also you can see someone's like demeanor and how they're able to like have a conversation with you and how they would have a conversation with someone else in the business, etc. And I just think, like, I don't know, for me, the whole job application process is really like formal and like archaic and stuck in a way that doesn't actually communicate how someone is. And I read so many CVs now and I think all of the opening paragraphs are the same, and especially with ChatGPT and things like that, like the way that people are going to stand out is by doing something a bit different.
And you want the passion to shine through.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
Like, skills you can teach people, but actually who they are and why they want this job and what they're going to give to this job to make it as successful as possible, they're the things that are most important.
Definitely.
Have you got any other questions?
Do you have any tips on what to put on your LinkedIn profile? Like, should it be strictly professional or should you like include your personal life in it?
That's a really good question. I think it depends what you feel comfortable with. I think it's really valuable to share bits, again, that you feel comfortable with, that, again, just build that relationship with people. Like, I'm thinking, especially in terms of clients, potential new clients, like, how do I get them to feel comfortable around me? And I think when I say share bits, I mean like visiting my sister in Scotland. It's never like really, really personal things, because I don't want to share those bits with people. I think it's okay if you do. And I think if you feel comfortable and confident sharing them, that's great, but it's just not for me and that's fine. And I think that it, again, it depends what you're trying to create, the environment that you're trying to create when people come on your page. I think it's really, really okay to say that you're learning. And I think the thing that stops a lot of people is, oh, well, I'm not an expert, so I shouldn't share something. Whereas for me, particularly if you're early in your career, like we said it before, like curiosity is such an important thing. The fact that you're willing to try things is such an important thing. The fact that you're committing to posting on social and being accountable and being intentional and trying to build a network is really, really impressive. And I think that all those things create a picture of you in someone's head. So, and I think they're more likely to come across you on social media than they are anywhere else. Like, again, if we're thinking about like how the kind of job application process is so archaic, in my head, it's so baffling that people would write an application or fill in a CV or whatever it is, a form online, send it off to someone, and then they sit and they wait and they wait and they wait. And I think, again, for me, that's always been something that I never wanted to do. Like, I didn't want to put my career into the hands of someone who I didn't know, who's going to make a decision on one of the things that will positively or negatively impact my life and happiness. So I've always tried to think, like, how do I in some way be really intentional about moving myself forwards in my career? And that's landed on me posting content on LinkedIn consistently for the last 4 years, because I think the things that are going to affect my job prospects and my career are my network and my reputation. And how do I be intentional about building those things? Well, if I'm constantly publishing my ideas on LinkedIn, people can build a picture up of me, of the way that I work, how I behave, how I treat people in the team. And that's moving me at least in some way towards building my career in a positive way, rather than filling in an application, waiting for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month for someone else to then decide yes or no. And then you go through the process. Like, it just didn't make sense to me to constantly be going through that.
Well, and it's worked for you. The fact that, so it sounds like Ash basically headhunted you for great influence. Is that right?
Yes, pretty much. I feel like that feels like a weird way to put it now. But yeah, and it was just reposting content on LinkedIn. And I think he saw what I was actually posting about having a course life crisis at the time. So he probably thought, this guy needs help.
It worked.
So yeah, and it's just kind of, he saw what I was posting, thought it was interesting. It was getting a lot of attention at the time. So I understood how to use LinkedIn in a way that maybe at that time other people didn't. And I saw that it was a really valuable tool. And I think we've definitely been on an evolution of understanding the platform since then. But again, that's a like perfect case in point example of someone seeing your ideas, knowing that they're thinking in a similar way and thinking, how do I bring this person into my business? So yeah, it's definitely led to my career as to how it is now, but it just was like a chance meeting. Like, we didn't know each other before. We didn't have any like connections or same network. It was just purely a case of LinkedIn content got in front of the right person. And yeah, I've been there for 4 years.
Love it. The word consistency has come up a few times. How important is being consistent at whatever you choose to do, whichever platform?
I think consistency is really important, but in tandem with that, it has to be fun.
Yeah.
And I think that so many people get bogged down in that you have to post every day, post 5 times a week, like churn out the content. And I just think you're a one-way ticket to burnout if you do that, because you're not enjoying the process. You're not doing it for the right reasons. You're doing it to kind of like hack the system. And I just don't think it's sustainable. And also, I wouldn't encourage anyone to do anything that they don't fundamentally enjoy, because what's the point? Yeah. So I think consistency is important for growth, and it's important if you're being intentional about something, it's important to be consistent. But at the same time, like, make it realistic and make the process enjoyable. So if I think of myself and use myself as an example, there's been times where consistent for me is posting 5 times a week. There has also been times when being consistent is posting once a week, because I just need to show up. Other things are happening. Work is really busy. And I think that being consistent doesn't mean all the time. It just means regularly enough that feels like feasible for you to maintain.
Yeah. Take the pressure off.
Yeah, exactly.
And keep it fun. You're so right. Because people will see through the content if it's not very fun.
Exactly, yeah.
Because your heart won't be in it.
If you don't enjoy it, no one else will.
Yeah. You've got to think, like, if I was on the other side of this, do I want to read it, watch it, listen to it, whatever Definitely. It might be. Any other questions?
Do you have any advice for students that want to go into social media?
I think The biggest piece of advice I would have is try, if you're trying to get into social, prove that you can do it before you need to. So that would be creating an account for yourself, or even creating like a faux brand account for something, and create the content before you have to. And the benefit of that is, like, again, you use it as a bit of an experiment. You figure out what works, what doesn't work. You figure out, like, even how the platform works at its core, how to track data, how to understand the analytics, how to, like, get in front of the right audience. And I think, again, so many people wait to be asked. And one of the core skills, I think, as a young person that is so fundamental that you can, anyone can do at any point, is, like, you can just do it. And the thing that I think was really limiting for me at the start of my career was I was waiting for someone to tell me what to do. And I think the earlier that you understand that you can do anything if you just give yourself permission, is honestly one of the most freeing things. And I think actually, like, throughout my career, that's been one of the, I think, most important skills that I've learned, is because I've constantly been the person that's already done it before someone's asked me to, it's meant that I've been able to, like, grow quickly. And I think I see it with everyone in the team that we have now, like, no one's waiting to be asked, they're all just going for it. And I think especially in a small business, like, it's so important. So I think, yeah, the biggest piece of advice I would say is, like, don't wait to be asked. If you're interested in social in particular, like, just create an account, start creating content about something, and you'll learn along the way.
What good advice. I absolutely love that. Well, this has been amazing. I feel like we could have sat here for like another two, three hours just chatting, because also I'm learning. I'm like picking your brains. So yeah, this was amazing. Thank you so much. You've been absolutely fantastic. And I feel like we're going to have a lot of people kicking off their personal brands, and Ashley in particular. How many times do you reckon you're going to post a week or a month or...?
4 days a week.
Four days a week.
Wow, she went big.
She went big. Well, I'll try anyway.
I'll try.
But just, you've got to start somewhere, haven't you? I'm excited to see your posts coming out. Thank you so much. You've been absolutely fantastic.
Thank you so much. Some great questions.
And thank you so much, Ashley. You've been amazing. This has been another episode of Behind the Future, and we look forward to seeing you on a future episode.
That concludes another brilliant episode of Behind the Future. Thank you so much for listening. You can listen back to other episodes on YouTube or your podcast platform of choice. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, as that will help us to grow this podcast, ensuring we can get the best guests on here for you to learn from. You can also follow us on socials, linked in the show notes for exclusive content. See you on the next episode.